The Laughter Permitted podcast is brought to you by Ally. Do it right. Hello. Welcome to Laughter Permitted. I'm Julie Foudy.
I'm Lynn Ozawi.
Lynn, I do feel like this one hit a sweet spot for you because we've got a coach and a domer, a Notre Dame connection, all in one.
I know. Talk about a win-win for me. A thoughtful talker. You know, I love me some thoughtful talkers.
A meditator.
A meditator. Get to talk meditation. And I can unabashedly say, go Irish.
Our guest is Notre Dame women's basketball head coach Neil Ivey. And Neil just finished her fourth season as head coach there. She took over the program after legendary coach Muffet McGraw retired in 2020. And mind you, McGraw had been their head coach for 33 seasons. Yes, 33 seasons. That's amazing. Neil actually played for Muffet at Notre Dame and won a national championship in 2001. As a player, she then played five seasons in the WNBA before becoming part of Muffet's coaching staff, and she also won a championship as an assistant coach in 2018. She has even coached in the NBA as an assistant with the Memphis Grizzlies. Under Neil, Notre Dame has had three consecutive trips to the Sweet 16, and Neil was the ACC Coach of the Year in 2023. We talk with Neil about how she's carving her own path at Notre Dame and managing all the joy and chaos of coaching along the way. So get comfortable listening. It's Neil Ivey. Hey there, Dope Village. As y'all know, Ally has backed Laughter Permitted since day one of our podcast as our financial ally. And honestly, Lynn, I might just tattoo Ally on my forehead. And Ally is currently on a mission to change the game for women sports.
And get this, along with being sponsors of the National Women's Soccer League, Atlantic Coast Conference, United States Golf Association, and the Las Vegas Aces, Ally has committed to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And you, my friends, can be part of the change by watching your favorite athletes crush it on TV, by going to women's sporting events in person, by, I don't know, maybe listening to every single episode of this amazing podcast on Trailblazing Women. Because every time you show up for women's sports, you are helping move the game forward. You can learn more about Ally by visiting ally.com.
Kick back, relax, and unwind. Let's have a good time. So bright, talking and laughing combined. Feeling all right, get comfortable, listen in. It's Laughter Permitted.
Did I hear designer zip-up jacket?
I know, I'm very grateful, Rich Fresh.
I was like, I didn't know such things existed. That is so nice.
I know, we're part of a really cool collaboration with him when we went to the Paris event with South Carolina. So Under Armour partner with him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So special podcast only.
That's sick. That is so cool.
That's what happens when you go to Paris. That should be, are you going to make that a yearly thing? Because I'd like to get on that bandwagon.
I know. They actually invited other, there's a couple other teams that are going. I forgot. I think Ohio State might be going two games, Louisville, UCLA. So they're continuing the experience, which is really dope. We just end up being the first, so the guinea pigs, but it was amazing. So
It looked amazing. I remember watching cool. That going, goodness.
Yeah, the outcome wasn't amazing, but the experience was.
That's all right.
Did you get any one-on-one time with Dawn Staley?
Yeah, for a little bit. We had dinner on a yacht, so we got a chance to talk, and then we were both kind of going in and out of the Eiffel Tower, so we got a chance to connect. And at the game a little bit. So little pockets because they had us moving.
You had dinner on a yacht and then it was the Eiffel Tower. I just feel terrible.
The life of a coach. Dinner on a yacht in Paris.
Sounds terrible.
Terrible.
All right. First thing we always do on the pod, Neil, is we set the scene. So where are you at? How you doing? All those things.
I'm great. I'm in Notre Dame. I'm in our practice facility. Everything's quiet now. We got one more week before our recruiting shut down, and also, you know, my team had they have finals next week, so they all leave after May 10th. So then it's you know, it's very quiet on campus. So all is well, but we are still busy with recruiting.
Before we start anything, I need to know, how long does it take you to recover from already? You have, you know, the season is long, March Madness feels long, and all the energy that goes into that. How long does it take to recover from that? Truly.
I feel like a couple weeks, but we have, I'm sure every coach feels this way. It has been, I don't feel like I've had a break since the season. So I would say after the recruiting shutdown, in another week, I could say probably it's going to take me about a week or two to recover, but season ended and we have been having visits and it's been busy. So this is probably the busiest I feel like I've been in the off season. So I haven't had a break.
Do you get like a little spa day or something, I hope?
Yeah, like just maybe pedicure, manicure, something like that.
But oh, really? I would do the full body.
Every once in a while, yeah. I definitely need to schedule a massage, but I work out. So I try to have my own little self-care time.
Yeah.
Being home, that's my break where I can actually just be in my house. I'm a homebody because I travel so much. So just being at home, it's great. It's peace of mind for me.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. Anytime I don't have to travel, I'm like, yes!
I know. Laying on my couch is like the best thing ever.
I wonder how coaches fit in self-care, because it seems like you're having to take care of so many other people. How do you even carve that into your life?
Yes, you have to. And I wasn't good at that before. Being a single mom, running after Jaden and coaching. A couple years ago, I was like, okay, I can't keep doing this. I'm going to run myself in the ground. So I carve out time. I meditate every morning. I take time for myself. I travel when I can. You know, I love the beach. So I like going places where I feel like I can just really reset. So in the last couple of years, I've really focused on having self-care. You have to prioritize that in your routine. And so that's what I've done. I had to learn that the hard way, though, because I wasn't like that before. I was just like, go, 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 go. And I felt like, you know, I really have to prioritize my health first, because if I'm not 100%, how could I give that to my team? So, and my son.
Yeah.
Smart.
I think a lot of us can relate to that. I am a daily meditator myself. Julie is not yet. We're going to get her on the bandwagon.
I can't sit like that. I can't. So I can't even do yoga. I get antsy in yoga. Oh.
I would love to hear your meditation practice.
Yes. Well, I just try to set aside like 20 minutes, but sometimes it goes over. And then I do have like certain playlists on my phone that I can guided meditation. I can do that as well. So it just kind of depends on my mood. But I always spend at least 20 to 30 minutes in silence.
Wow.
So it's definitely a practice. I've been doing it for probably like 12 years.
Wow.
And it's really changed the way that I have been centered. And, you know, I could tell a big shift for myself. And with so many things, my mind is racing and I have so much stuff on my plate. So it allows me to have like that quiet time for me to just really reset and just really focus on being centered and at peace. So it's been very helpful for me. I would suggest it.
Pre-coffee, post-coffee, when is it?
I know. Well, I like tea. I like chai tea. I don't do coffee.
Okay. Pre-tea, so, post-tea?
Post-tea. I like post-tea after it.
Okay.
Especially if I don't have to like go into work or anything, because I depending on my day, I'll wake up earlier if I have an earlier morning, obviously with work. So, but it's every day. So if I don't meditate, I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, I try to find a pocket of time, but it's the first thing I do when I wake up. So I wake up earlier, depending on my schedule.
Yeah. Oh gosh. All right.
You had to give Julie the quick elevator pitch for why she should start meditating 20 minutes a day, how has it dramatically changed your life?
Yeah, just, you know, just again, just peace of mind. And your stillness for me has been very rewarding, because I feel like all the pressures, I can handle pressure better. You know, I'm just like my mind, it allows me just to refocus and calm my mind, because as a coach and as working women, you know, you have a lot on your plate. So for me, it gives me peace.
Yeah.
That's what I need to be able to perform. Yeah. Positivity, good energy, positivity.
Yeah.
Like I feel good after it, because I feel like my mind has been settled. So I feel like I'm in a good spirit. My spirit is at peace.
Okay. I'm kind of sold. I think you coaches need that too, because I mean, look at what you have to deal with as coaches. I don't know how you do it current day, right? Transfer portal, NIL deals, collectives. I'm like, it all seems a lot right now if you're a coach. How How do you handle all of this new world order in collegiate athletics? That's seems nutty.
Yes, it is definitely different. I would say
Good word.
Because for me being, I just finished year four. My first year was in COVID. So it was a racial pandemic and the COVID pandemic. So I walked in to the collegiate space while it was changing and no one understood what was going on and all the uncertainty then. So then every year, like you just mentioned, transfer portal, one-time waivers, you know, is checked off, like that's happening. And then NIL has gotten stronger and more aggressive. So every year I've been trying to navigate it, just putting a lot of support around me. I have a great amount of support with my athletic director, Jax Warwick. Now he just retired. So my new athletic director. So just trying to be a sponge and learn and just try to stay competitive, because that's what it is. Like, you have to stay competitive because all the schools and all the coaches, like, we're all figuring this out on our own, to be honest. So I'm just trying to learn as much as I can, and I'm trying to stay competitive in this landscape. But it is definitely challenging. I'm not going to lie. It is challenging because I feel like you're doing things the right way. And for me, I try to lead with integrity as well. So it's like, I can stay competitive, but also, you know, I'm already selling the things that are important to me is the education and the program, the success of the program. And now you got throwing money with that. So it's like, true to myself, but also being competitive in the space.
I hear a lot of on the soccer side, so I don't know about on the basketball side, but I hear a lot of coaches talk about, like, the first thing they hear from recruits is, you know, what do you got for me in terms of money? And I'm like, oh God, that breaks my heart. I get that part of it. And I'm happy that they're getting some pay, but, like, the priorities just seem different for the young athlete coming into collegiate athletic. I mean, you went for the school, you went for everything that the program stood for, all of those things. Now it's like, well, how much am I making?
Yes, it's definitely changed. I think it's definitely a different time. And I know all the coaches in every sport, you're just adjusting to it because that's what collegiate athletics, this is where our landscape is now. So you have to adjust to it. You got to adjust to it fast. And so that's what we're doing. And I agree. Like, I'm happy. Like, I'm happy for NIL. I'm happy for the players being able to monetize their brand. Yeah. And I love watching them build their brand and because, you know, their confidence, their voice. So there's so much good in it. It's just, like you mentioned, it's a lot. It's a lot that has been placed on, I think, coaches to manage. You know, you got to have the right people managing it and, you know, just trying to find your way of navigating it, is all I can say. And every year I feel like it changes.
You might need to start meditating 40 minutes a day. Yeah. I mean, you're going to double that time, sister.
Yeah. I don't think 30 minutes is enough now. So, like, I need to make more time for that. But
you're like, I'm sorry. I need another hour for all of the shit that is happening right now.
No, for real. But I will say, like, I mean, I have a lot of support here. And so if you feel like you're supported and you have the resources to compete, and I do feel that way. So I'm fortunate that I'm in a network in Notre Dame that is really, really supporting me because, you know, if you don't have that support, it's a lot harder. So I'm gonna tell you, I'm super grateful that I have so much support.
I see the beautiful ND Block logo behind you. And when you took over the program from your former coach, Muffin McGraw, your former colleague, where did you start as far as establishing what the principles are for your program and really bringing you to Notre Dame?
I went with culture first because I thought, you know, I'm replacing a legend, you know, I'm following a legend, but I'm a different person, you know, and I knew that it was going to be the expectation, the pressure of following a Muffet McGraw, Hall of Famer, somebody that has been here for 33 years and that has changed women's basketball, she's top, you know, in that top tier of coaching. So I just felt like I needed to come in, put my stamp on it, my personality, and went straight to culture of who I am because I'm different. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've learned, I'm a reflection of her, but I'm different as well. You know what I mean? Like, so that's what I did. And I came in and just put my stamp on my personality, my passion, my love, and then culture. I just felt like establishing my core values, establishing who I was as a leader. Those were the things that I felt like I needed to come in day one and be. And I just, the best advice that anyone has given me, and definitely Coach McGraw, is like, I have to be myself. Mm-hmm. I can't I can't feel like I need to come in and be her because I'm not. You know what I mean? Like, so I just felt like I'm just going to come in. I have a very big personality and, you know, I'm just going to be myself and stand on what I believe. And there's a lot of core values, a lot of values that I learned from Coach McGraw and what I've learned by being here at Notre Dame for so long. So a lot of things that I believe, or some things that, you know what I'm saying, like were passed down to me from my mom, from Coach McGraw. And so still being true to myself, but trying to kind of carve my own lane.
How would you describe your culture?
It's built on love. So I would say my culture is my vision. I always talk about, you know, love, serve, mentor, because I think as a coach, I recognize the value of mentoring more so than the coaching piece. And that's how I thrived as a player, you know, coaches building, instilling confidence in me and loving on me and pouring on me. And that's how, that's who I am. That's my culture is love. That's number one. So, you know, it's, I mean, obviously it's competitiveness. You know, I have core values, being positive, positive energy, trust, accountability, and like I said, respect and love. So those are all of my core values, but I think love is number one. So they know, you know what I'm saying? Like tough love sometimes, the way that I coach, I'm going to build the relationship with you so you know that it's coming from a place of love. Because sometimes my players need tough love. And, you know, sometimes it means, you know, I have to push them a little bit further than they want to be pushed, but they know it's coming from a place of love. So that's where I always begin. And I feel like having that foundation has helped me be successful. It's how I felt as an assistant coach, you know, having my, you know, player relationships with players as an assistant. And so that's what I've kept as a head coach. I'm a player's coach, number one. So I'm a player's coach. So I can relate to them because I've been in their shoes and yeah. I know how to speak their language. I have a son that's 22 years old. So, you know, I know how to speak the language. I know, you know, I'm a mother as well, you know, so I wear a lot of different hats. And so I bring all those hats as their coach. And so I feel like having that love as my foundation is who I am. And so anybody that talks to you is like, you know, Coach Ivy, like how I'm recruiting them as a, and when they're, you know, not signed and how they are on my team, it's the same. I don't really change. I'm pretty genuine with who I am. So relationships are really important to me. And I feel like the foundation of that is love.
You said love, serve, mentor.
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Yes.
I love that so much. I was like, oh, I think I heard that right. Love, serve, mentor. Yes. I love to serve too, right? Like that I feel like that's one of the biggest components of leadership is you're serving others as well. And so I think we forget that a lot in leadership. So I'm glad that's part of your three core values too.
Yes, cool. Absolutely. And this, the community, you know what I mean? Like I know, I understand that we're in this role, you know, we inspire a lot of young people. And so just having that service or servant mindset is what I always try to be. Yeah.
We actually talk a lot about joy on the podcast as well. And something that's come up with coaching is joy and a fun factor is actually key to success as well. Do you have that element in your program?
I do. And that's so true because this is so overwhelming for them, especially here at Notre Dame. Like the academics is so challenging, you know, having to balance both. So I always try to find joy in things. Sometimes I'll do like a curveball day. For my curveball day is like they think they're coming in for practice. You know what I mean? Like we'll play dodgeball. And I'm big on breaking bread. So like I have a chef that I know that comes up, is a like really good family friend. So I'll have Soul Food Sunday sometimes where he'll just come up and cook food. And it's not mandatory, it's voluntary, but I just have, you know, have them come to my house and he has a whole meal prepared for us. And we just play games and listen to music and eat. And I try to do that every once in a while to kind of get that kind of family vibe, family atmosphere, but also just to get them away from campus, to get in a home cooked meal. They work so hard. It's like, you gotta find ways to have fun too.
I want to be part of that dodgeball game. I love me some dodgeball.
I know, so fun. They love that.
It's so fun. When you mentioned Jaden, who's 22, your son, he's playing with the Pistons and in the NBA. I mean, how much pride just oozes out of you? Are you able to watch a lot of those games and get to them?
I am just so proud. And it's still like, I still have to pinch myself that he just finished year two, that he's in the NBA. You know, I'm like, it's like, this is such an incredible accomplishment and a dream come true. And I try to get to as many games as I can. Detroit's only 3 hours away from Notre Dame. It's a trip that I can do in a day. Honestly, I can. Sometimes I'll drive up, go to the game, see him afterwards, and I'm right back on the road. I have NBA League Pass, so I have every game recorded. I can watch it on my phone if I'm away from the house. So I always see him. Like, I always go back and watch it, watch him play. But if I can be present, I'm trying to get there.
Oh, it's so nice that it's I mean, 3 hours is still a slog, but it's nice that you're able to even drive there, right? And get there and have that option too. When you're in the stands, if you're live, are you like, yo, Jason?
I'm not in with the Pistons because he has so many games. So I'm like he'll hear me because I'm all screaming if he does anything good. But I was more like that at Purdue because I just felt
Purdue
had 30 games, you know, like in the NBA, they have so many games. And so I'm a little bit different in the NBA, but once the Pistons get a chance to get to the playoffs, I'll probably be like that. They're still in the rebuild process, but at Purdue, I was loud. I was on the refs. I was that mom, and I'm like, I'm embarrassed.
I love that so much.
Yeah, I took off the coach's hat, and I was mama. So I was on the refs. I could do that more, and they can't. You know what I'm saying?
They're fouling my son. Exactly.
I wasn't getting penalized as a parent yelling at the refs. He heard me. I was, you know. You knew not to say anything around me because I was had the jersey on, like I was crazy, mama. But fun. I brought the energy, and he knew I was there. So and he played harder when I was in the arena. So I made sure.
Oh, that's so good. That's such a good story too. I'm like, oh. Hey there, Dope Village. Lynn and I have been involved in women's sports our entire lives. And truly, we've never been more excited for what's to come in this women's sports space. And one big reason, Ally. Ally has made a commitment to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And that means more money going to women's sports and more visibility for what these incredible athletes are accomplishing. Ally is on a mission to change the game for women's sports.
So here at Laughter Permitted, we're going to keep telling the stories of trailblazing women. And every time you listen in, you are part of that change. To learn more about Ally, go to ally.com.
What's so amazing about you being a mom of an NBA player is that you have experience coaching in the NBA. Mm-hmm. What is that like as far as having perspective of what Jaden is going through right now?
Yeah, it gave me so much perspective and Jaden perspective because he, and luckily I was with the Grizzlies. It was such an amazing opportunity for me. And so I brought him around as much as I could. And he was at a prep school. That was our first time ever being away from each other. And I had to get his blessing. I was like, Jaden, like if this is, yeah, this was a family decision. And the fact that he was like, mom, you have to chase your dreams. You have to go. And then, then we went different routes for 1 year. So his senior year and the 1 year I was with the Grizzlies, but he came up, you know, he would get a chance to like come to the games and I had him come early so he can sit and watch, you know, the guys work out. Honestly, to be in that atmosphere, it allowed him to dream, you know, he wanted to be where they were. And so for him to be exposed to that was such a blessing. And I knew that taking the job, I'm like, he's going to get the opportunity to see this in a different way and to be behind the scenes to see it. So, you know, he's in the back waiting on me, you know, getting a chance to meet everybody, meet the coaches. And so he saw what he was dreaming to do. So the perspective and also that I gained was just obviously the travel, you know, I got a chance to give him advice on like what this is really going to look like, you know, the workouts, training camp, you know, what he has to do, what he needs to work on. And, you know, all the coaching part of it, I got a chance to really share that with him. You know, I'm just so grateful that I got a chance to live my dream, to be able to play or to coach in the NBA, but also to share that with him. And now I'm in the NBA. It's just a special gift. That was nothing but God. I would have, if you told me 10, 12 years ago that was going to happen, I would have been like, there's no way, you know, because it's such a small window of, you know, like the percentage of players actually make the NBA. I don't know what the percentage is, but it's not big. So for him to actually accomplish this and to actually have had the opportunity to see it and for me to be a coach in the NBA was nothing but God. So I'm just grateful.
Mm. Are you the first mom who's coached in the NBA that's had a son play in the NBA?
I think so.
I mean, it's got to be.
Yeah.
All right. We're calling that stat right now.
Yes. I would have loved to coach him. Like, that was like, that would have been so crazy to coach him, but
you still could. There's always that chance.
There's always that chance, but
yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. All right. Lynn game.
Niall, you were about to go head to head with Julie in a game of trivia.
Uh-oh.
Here are the rules. There will be five questions, best of five wins, all multiple choice.
Okay.
So when you think you know the answer at any point in the question, you can chime in to answer the question. So what will your chiming in method be? What have you got for us?
Go Irish.
Okay.
I love it. Okay. I love it. Jules, what have you got?
I am back to my British phone booth.
I don't think you've abandoned it this season. No. I think you've been with it the whole time.
Swaggy has eaten every squeaky toy I have. They are all no longer squeaky.
Used to be dog toys as the noisemaker, and then Swaggy would make an appearance.
Yeah. Her, like, see this Jules, one last Jules week, dog. I thought this was the guy, and then I was like, there's nothing there!
Okay. Love it.
Every game has a theme. The theme of this game is Tamika time.
Hey, catching.
Julie and I are card-carrying members of the Tamika Catchings fan club.
Amazing.
And, yes. Yep. And so all of these questions are about Tamika Catchings.
We're in trouble.
I know. I was just thinking that this could be unfair.
In trouble.
Julie, I'm going to tell you, you're going to need to be aggressive, I think.
Okay. I'm ready. I'm aggressive. All right. With love.
Yes, with love.
With so much peace and love to Tamika Catchings. Question one. What number did Tamika wear?
24.
I am so screwed.
Correct.
I'm done. 24, 10. Oh, damn. I got to get in early. Nothing. Okay.
That's the quickest anyone has ever answered a question.
It's Kat.
Question two. Tamika has four Olympic gold medals. Which Olympic Games was her first? Was it A, the 2004 Athens Games?
Go Irish.
B, Niall.
Athens.
Correct.
One more and you're done, Julie.
I love that you're keeping track. 2-0, Niall. I'm getting this one. I'm at least chiming in. I haven't even been able to damn chime.
I might sweep like the Timberwolves just did.
Oh, shoot.
Question three. Tamika led the WNBA 8 times in this category. Julie.
Defensive player of the year.
Not an option, but that was such a good try. That was such a good try. And
well, my chance. What are the?
Yeah, now she knows. She's like, give me the categories.
Give me the categories.
Led the NBA in this category. Was it A, steals, B, blocks, or C, rebounds?
A, steals.
Correct.
I'm gonna give this to you.
Capital L. Put it on your forehead. Tamika will be so proud. Okay, she had to have been defensive player of the year. Maybe not 8 times in a row.
Oh, for sure.
But she was for like sure. 4 times.
That was a valid answer, though.
It was a valid. Okay. And you saw that Coke commercial where she like swapped him out.
Oh, yeah. She was one of the most relentless players I've ever played with. So.
Oh, God. Catch.
I hate that I beat you at your own game.
I lose this game a lot, Niall, okay. But never, ever that.
Never
I don't
it.
Get that smoked every time.
Smoked.
That was good. Okay, that leads right into my most pressing questions because I didn't know the whole anti-Tamika Catchings to Jaden background until like All-Star game.
I know.
So give some backstory on that.
We were drafted in the same class and that year in 2001. And right. That was the summer. Well, that's the first summer I was pregnant with Jaden. So then the second summer I had him, you know, and so in training camp, like I'm really close with Tamika and she just, the whole team, like I just, all of them, He was the, we had three mothers on the team. So it was two girls, and Jaden was the only boy of the three mothers that we had on the roster. And so, I mean, everybody just loved Jaden. Jaden's a people person, so he went to everybody. But Tamika, just in particular, like, he loved Tamika, and Tamika was always around and always helped. You know, we stay in the same apartment complex. So just really, really close. And so I would bring Jaden on the road trips, and like, everybody would hold him on the plane. Like, Tamika always had him on the plane. So like, all right, Neil, you need a break, you know? And then, so she was always just being there for me, come over the house, and just, we're just family, you know? So they were, she was always around. And then just growing up, like, Jaden loved, always looked up to her. So once I retired, I would always bring Jaden to the Fever game. So we always stay to see catch.
Yeah.
We're family, really.
Yeah.
And that tie-in for her to be his Rising Stars coach in Indiana, which was his favorite arena to play in.
Right.
It was just really cool. That's where that full circle moment came in, just because she was there from the beginning, as far as just being on Auntie Ketch.
Yeah. Talk about love serve mentor, right?
Exactly.
She's like the perfect example of that right there.
Exactly.
Character. Mm.
Exactly. So they're still super close. And that was just a moment. And I got a chance to go to that game. So I drove up to the game and watched them, and just real cool picture behind the scene, like after the game, just taking a picture in that arena. It's just so cool. Like, how does that happen?
Mm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's the best.
I love that you're just a mom driving to see your son play.
I know.
I love that.
In fact, it was like last year, it was in Utah, and I did get a chance to get out there. His big moments, I try to find a way. And that was his first time being a Rising Star. First of all, being a Rising Star in general in the All-Star weekend. And then he was a second year Rising Star. So that was cool. And then it was only, you know, Indianapolis is like 2 hours away. So that was perfect. It worked out.
Yeah, that's awesome. So my most pressing question has to do with your sideline gear and style. There's a trend post pandemic that coaches have gone a bit more casual, but you, it appears, dress for success. And I just was wondering what's behind that.
Yes. Well, actually started as an assistant, you know, Coach McGraw, we were always big on just dressing up, you know, obviously pre-pandemic. And so I was dressed up as an assistant coach. And so I just love beautiful clothes. You know, I love the way that I feel in them. I try to have my style feeling classy, but elegant, but powerful. You know, that's kind of like I like coming off in a powerful way, like feminine. I tap into my feminine energy, and I like showing my strength and my power. And so after the pandemic, I was like, I'm super bored with these, you know, the collared shirts and all that. I did that because the mask, like, you know, first 2 years, and then after the pandemic when I took over, and then my third year, I'm like, and I threw in a couple, my second year, I threw in a couple games. I'm like, okay, big game, let's all dress up. But it was like 2-3 games. And then after that, I was like, I got to go back to who I am. And it is dressing up, like you mentioned. So that's where that came from. And then now it's kind of taken on a life of its own. And I'm like, okay, now it's pressure. Like, I just can't come out with anything because everybody's looking now. But it was cool because, again, I love playing. I love fashion. I love trying different things. And I try to wear clothes that are elegant, but also, you know, like, go well with my body. You know, like, just making sure that everything is is displayed in a beautiful way. But I love clothes and I love fashion. So it is fun playing. It's fun learning fashion. So that's what I'm doing right now.
I love when you go green, full green. I'm like, yes.
I did full green, and I got a lot of positive feedback with that. And that was just random. Like, I just went online. I'm like, found a couple pieces, and I'm like, I'm gonna try this.
Yeah.
So I need to
it
get
pops.
Some. It does pop.
I played for a green soccer team my entire life, so I start going, no, nobody messes with the green machine. I start singing that when you're on the sideline.
That's what I should have played that when I wore that. Maybe next year I will.
I could create that cheer for y'all if you want it. No, I got you. I'm here for you. All right. Last thing we do on the pod is high, low cheer. I used to do this around the dinner table with my kids. They're high of the day, they're low of the day, and someone they cheered for you, it's going to be for your career. So high of your career, low of your career, and the cheer is for someone you're grateful for who's helped you along the way.
The highest playing or coaching?
Either.
Winning national championship in my hometown, 2001, for sure.
Oh, boom.
Yes, and about a long time ago, but having to come back from 2 ACL to end my career at home, that was highlight of my career.
Yeah. Yep, in St. Louis.
In St. Louis, yes.
That's it's awesome.
Low. You said the low?
The low.
The low. I would say my first year, that was challenging.
At Notre Dame? Playing?
As a coach.
As a coach, okay.
My first year. So it was like bittersweet because it was just a hard year, I think, for everybody. The pandemic.
Mm.
So I think that was probably the most challenging year that I've had.
Yeah, to take over as a head coach in the middle of that.
Yeah, so it was bittersweet for that because it was like amazing, but it was like, the pandemic. So that was hard. But rewarding, though. I would say rewarding. Yeah. I feel like that was probably, if in 20, however many years I coach, that would probably be the year I feel like I grew the most first year. Yeah. Learning so much in the fire, I would say.
Yeah, that's what we often hear. The low is what teaches you the most, right?
Exactly, exactly.
And the cheer.
Buffy McGraw.
Mm.
She, somebody that saw me as a player, he saw me. And then someone that saw me as an assistant, giving me an opportunity. Because sometimes breaking into this business, it's hard. And a lot of people, you don't get the opportunity because you don't have experience. Well, how do you get experience if you don't have the opportunity? And so she gave me an opportunity as an assistant coach. And just, I just learned so much. That opportunity gave me this opportunity, as a head coach. But, I learned from a Hall of Fame coach. So I studied everything she did. She gave me a lot of freedom. Then I got a chance to be a mom, also a coach. So being able to have that work-life balance and the opportunity, I'm so grateful for her to be my mentor.
Yeah. And to learn from one of the best on a daily basis for so long, right? Yes. Play for her, learn from her. Great one. Yay. You're a great one. Yael, thank you so much for taking the time in the middle of this chaos. May you get that spa day. May you get hour of meditation. I'm going to start blocking that for you daily because I think you're going to need it with all the chaos of college sports coming up.
Yes.
I hope we get to meet live and in person one day because you truly are a gem, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, such a pleasure talking with you.
It was awesome being on this podcast. Thank you.
That was awesome. Really fun.
Agreed. Yay. Yes.
Takeaways, Lynn. What do you got?
I cannot believe that the idea of peace came up again. That was my takeaway with our last episode with Alyssa Nair, how Alyssa finds peace in pressure situations. And Nael talked about how meditation helps her find peace. And I really love when we get these echoes of themes on the pod.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I loved when she said, love, serve, mentor. And you notice like these thoughtful coaches, they're not talking X's and O's. They're not talking about, you have to be a tactical technician. You have to, of course they have all that. But the thing that separates them, I truly believe, is that they care deeply about the athletes they're coaching, that they care deeply about the culture they're creating. They care deeply about creating good humans. In the end, that's what a coach does. And I think the best of them do that in a super thoughtful, meaningful way. And you can see it just oozing out of her that that's so important to Nael is that culture you're creating, which is, I think, really the gift of coaches. Is that you're shaping someone into not just being an awesome athlete, but most importantly, a better human. So she checked all those boxes, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. The love part. Ooh, that got me. That really got me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Beautiful.
All right. Questions permitted.
This question is going to come on the heels of last episode, how you talked about how one of the things you love about going to Angel City games is that you can just be a fan. You've got your beer. Mm-hmm. You can be as loud as you want. You can let loose.
Uh-huh.
So I've got a question about what it's like commentating a U.S. Women's National Team match when the team is, let's say, playing badly.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel Arnold asks, how do you remain professional and objective when you must be kind of dying inside?
That's a really good question. You don't have any choice. You go into a different mode there. And clearly I haven't had any beers when I'm commentating, thank goodness. Because all of that could be entertaining. I mean, the thing that's hammered into you from day one as a journalist and a reporter or a broadcaster is just the objectivity of it. You can't say we, of course. You can't say us. And sometimes those do slip out. You could only say those kind of things referring to the United States when you're talking about the time when you played, like when, you know, you're maybe referencing a World Cup that I played in as a player. I can then say we. But so I think from a very early stage of my broadcasting career, that was something that was very, that people hammered into me of just the importance of analyzing and being objective and not subjective. And as much as you feel it, you also separate when you put that headset on.
Mm.
And so I do think you need, it's this balance of, you also need that emotion of like, yeah, this matters. And so you want some of that emotion, but I can't get too wrapped up in it, of course, because then I think it takes away from your objectivity. So I don't know. That's never actually been that hard. Maybe because the U.S. team has been largely successful.
Yeah, it's a good point.
You know, but it will be, you know, it'll be interesting to watch. Now, when I take my headset off and then I'm talking to, you know, former teammates about what happened, that's that's a whole different commentary. Actually, you get that. You got a lot of that on the bonus stuff we did with the World Cup, right?
Mm.
I didn't have to actually call those matches, but you'll get it when we hopefully do some bonus episodes around the Olympics, too.
You do strike a really good balance. One of the things I enjoy about listening to you commentate is I feel like I learn things about the game, the way you explain it and just the nuances nice. That you see. That's how I've learned more about soccer and gained some more understanding about it through listening to you commentate. And I think, too, you bring enthusiasm. As much as maybe you have to temper your emotion or keep that balanced, you do bring... You do bring enthusiasm, which is fun to listen to.
Hmm. So thank you.
Fun to listen to you the upcoming Olympics.
Yeah, yeah. So, and those aren't very far, party people. Those are just right around the corner, and I'll be calling those. So that's fun. I don't even know if that's public knowledge, but you hear it here first on Laughter Permitted. Let's just break that. I don't think NBC has yet, but sorry, Molly. Thank you for that question, Rachel. Be sure to send us an email with your questions for Questions Permitted. Or maybe just email us about your hopes, dreams, and aspirations. We also like to hear those. We are at laughterpermitted@gmail.com. Thank you to our presenting sponsor, Ally, for their support, and to Kate Diaz for our theme music. And as always, kids, remember, sing it with us.
Laughter permitted.
It's built on love.